The story of Ruth is a popular love story that found in the Bible, and it's not what most people would actually label as a typical love story. It's not what most people would go out writing a love story like, is the book of Ruth. Because Ruth doesn't go out searching for love, but she eventually finds it anyway. Rather, what we see is a woman whose life is defined by love. Everything she does is the result of her love for other people. And love is a very important concept for us to understand. It's something that we talked about in our Bible class this morning briefly. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, Paul says, "If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I give or have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I'm nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing." Love is basically what ends up defining Christianity. And so Jesus commands of us in John chapter 13 and in verse 34, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." This is what makes us distinct. The world hates each other. They're finding reasons to divide. They find reasons to pick fights. Love is what defines us. And so it's required of us. In 1 John chapter 4. 1 John chapter 4 and in verse 21. "And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should love his brother also." And so we're going to go through this story of Ruth, not to get all the details of the story, but I want you to notice how love defines her life. We see it being defined in her devotion. When we're introduced to Ruth in the story of Ruth, so going to Ruth chapter 1, and in verse 4, it says, "They took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of one was Orpha, and the name of the other Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. This is the first time we know. We were introduced to her as a wife of one of Naomi's sons. Actually, it's not until the end of the story that we're even told which son she married. And that is in Ruth chapter 10, or 4 and verse 10. We find out she's the widow of Mahlon. Now, misfortune strikes the family, and Naomi loses her husband. In verse 3, it says, "Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons." And even though her sons marry, they also end up dying at seemingly a very young age. In verse 5, it says, "Both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband." And we find that, you know, basically Naomi has nothing left, and so she expects her daughter-in-laws to leave her. But Ruth refuses. In Ruth chapter 1, verse 15, she said, "Behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return to you after her, your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." Now, we've mentioned again this morning, the Greek word for love that we typically find in the Bible, not all in every place, but most of the time, is the word agape, and it refers to a devoted love. It's a love that's given even if it's not returned. And here, Ruth is exemplifying this. Naomi is telling her, go back home. In a sense, that's a rejection. Not that she doesn't love Ruth, but she's telling her to go back home. And Ruth doesn't give. She's going to give her love regardless. But then, that's an example for us as well. Going back to 1 Corinthians 13, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and look at verse 5. So, talking about love, it says, love does not act unbecomingly, it does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account of wrong suffered. That's what we're talking about. Love doesn't seek its own. It's not about what I want, but what I need to give to the one I love. And also in verse 8, it says, love never fails. It doesn't stop. Just because things are getting hard or things are getting difficult, love continues. She doesn't leave Naomi because her husband died. She doesn't abandon her because Naomi decides to move to another country. Naomi even seeks to dissuade her, but Ruth persists. Her love doesn't fail. She has devotion to Naomi. We also see diligence in Ruth's love. Because of her love for Naomi, she goes to work to provide for herself and for Naomi. In Ruth chapter 2, and in verse 2, and Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after the one in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. And Ruth was not slack about it. In chapter 2, verse 5, it says, then Boaz said to his servants who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? The servant in charge of the reapers replied, she's the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now, and she has been sitting in the house for a little while. It's not until basically at lunchtime did she take a break. She worked all morning gathering food for her and her mother-in-law. You know, we're supposed to show that type of love as well. In Galatians chapter 6, Galatians chapter 6, and starting at verse 9, it says, let us not lose heart in doing good. For in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who are of the household of faith. We are not to give up. We're not to get weary. We're not, just because it's long doesn't mean that we need to slow down. But Ruth also shows love in the fact that she's willing to sacrifice. She gave up her family. She gave up her country to move to a foreign land. And again in Ruth chapter 2, verse 11, Boaz replied to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. This is what she was willing to do because she had love for her mother-in-law. And when she was offered food, what's fascinating is that she ate enough to satisfy herself, but she did not eat all of it. In Ruth chapter 2 and verse 14, at mealtime Boaz said to her, come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. And then jumping down to verse 18, so she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took out and gave to Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. She ate enough that she was satisfied, but then she packed the rest of the ways and make sure that her mother-in-law has something to eat. You know, that type of love is demanded of us as well. Take a look at Philippians chapter 2. Philippians 2 and verse 3, do nothing from selfish ambition or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. And so we are to help our brethren in whatever need they have. In 1 John chapter 3, 1 John chapter 3 and in verse 17, but whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. Now, there's another aspect of love that she demonstrates, and that's humility. Now, we don't often think of humility as a part of love. But it comes about because of her love for her mother-in-law, that she was willing to be humble. When she goes to gather grain, she asks permission. She first asks permission of her mother-in-law in verse 2, which we read before, please let me go into the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. She asks her mother-in-law for permission. She then goes in verse 7, the servant reported that she said, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Now, the reason I'm pointing this out is what she's doing is invoking a law that was in the Old Testament. That law is in Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19 and in verse 9. Now when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap the very corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. Nor shall you glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather the fallen fruit of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the needy and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. By asking for permission to glean the field, what she's doing is admitting, I'm poor. I'm destitute. I'm in need. And she received that permission. Ruth also shows humility in that, you know, typically in the dating scene, it's the guy who goes chasing after the girl and asks if she will marry him. In Ruth's story, it's the opposite. Ruth's the one who brings up the possibility of marriage to Boaz. And in Ruth chapter 3 and verse 7, it says, when Boaz had eaten and drunk his heart, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the harvest of, When Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and laid down. It happened in the middle of the night that a man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. Now, to understand this, what she's basically doing, she called herself a maid. She called herself a servant. And she's basically proposing that because he's close relative, that he should marry her as a concubine, as a servant who is also a wife, is what she's proposing to be done. That, again, takes humility. She's willing to make herself a lifetime servant to Boaz, as well as his wife, so that she might serve Naomi. We got to understand, humility is what God wants of his people. In Colossians chapter 3, Colossians chapter 3, And in verse 12, so as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. This is the type of love that we're to have. Humility of heart is not about what I want, but of the one whom I'm loving. And also in Proverbs chapter 22, Proverbs 22, and in verse 4, the reward of humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. Combining those two, being willing to follow God, to fear His laws, and to be humble, God makes sure that they are rewarded. In fact, that's what we see in Ruth's story. Her love is rewarded. Ruth didn't do all these things because she wanted honor. She genuinely loved Naomi, and she sought to care for her. And it was her love that Boaz noticed about her. Going back to Ruth chapter 2 and verse 11, when Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been reported to me. How you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know." And then jumping down to chapter 3 and verse 10, then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether rich or poor." She didn't chase after guys. She was focused on doing what was best for her mother-in-law. Boaz focused and noticed that Ruth typified love. And eventually she becomes his wife, but not his concubine. He doesn't choose to do that. He chooses to marry her as his full wife. In Ruth chapter 4 and verse 13, "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son." You know, we should also work to glorify God. Not because we're looking for the glory, but that we're wanting to glorify God and do what He wants us to do. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16. "Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." We do what is good and righteous to others around us. We show that love because we want to show that love. And as a result, God is glorified because He taught us. There's another story that I wanted to mention, and that's the one of Jacob and Rachel. Jacob fell in love with Rachel. He showed that same idea of devotion and diligence because he agreed basically to work 7 years for the privilege of marrying Rachel. Take a look at Genesis chapter 29 and in verse 20. "So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her." Now, Laban then tricks him into marrying his sister, but he agrees to work another 7 years so that he can marry the woman that he loved. In Genesis 29, verse 27, "Come, complete the work of this one, and we will give you the other also for the service which you shall serve for me for another 7 years. So Jacob did so and completed her week, and she gave her his daughter Rachel as a wife." You know, basically Jacob became a servant in Laban's household. But he was willing to do that because of Rachel. in Genesis 30 and verse 25. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know that my service with which I have rendered you. He's asking for permission to leave because he's basically been a servant in Laban's household. And it wasn't that he had a good time either of it. He was ill-treated. In Genesis 31 and verse 2, it says, Jacob saw that the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. And later on in verse 5, he says, and he said to them, I see that your father's attitude that is not friendly towards me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, the God did not allow him to hurt me. And at the end, just like in Ruth's story, Jacob is rewarded for his love and his devotion. Because in chapter 31 and verse 9, it says, thus God has given me taken away your father's livestock and has given to me. And in verse 5, oops, I'm jumping down the wrong place. Verse 14. Rachel and Laban said to him, Rachel and Leah said to him, do we have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned to him as foreigners? For he sold us and has entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. God made sure that Jacob received proper compensation for the work that he did and the effort that he put in, that he did because he loved Rachel. The verse that we had read for us earlier in 1 Corinthians 16, in 1 Corinthians 16, look at verse 14 again. It says, let all that you do be done in love. It ought to define our lives. It should be what we are and how we behave. And it should ooze out from everything that we do. God loved us. In 1 John chapter 4 and verse 19, we love because He, God, loved us first. This is why we are able to love. We didn't create it. God showed it first. And so we ought to love one another. Down in 1 John chapter 4, verse 11. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought to love one another. Love should define the type of life that we live. And I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those who are children of God and would like the prayers of your brother on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.